everyone, welcome back to the Manic Manor podcast. This is Mitchie. And for today's episode, we are going to talk about Helios Airway Flight 522. Now, Helios Airways 522 flight was a passenger flight that forever in history will be known as the Ghost Plane or Ghost Flight. The plane was scheduled to go from Larnaca, Cyprus to Prague in the Czech Republic and had a stop also in Athens, Greece. At the time, the plane had 121 passengers, including 6 crew members. However, the plane would never reach its destination, as it would crash into a mountain near Grammatiko, Greece, in what would be known as the deadliest aviation accident in Greek history. So what exactly happened, we'll have to look into the background of the plane. So for the background of the plane, it was a Boeing 737-300, and originally operated under a different airway before it was leased out to the Helios company, and it gained the nickname Olympia when it was with Helios. Helios Airways was known for being a low-cost airline service that tended to lease out their planes they were used for their services. This plane in particular originally had flown for DBA from the years of 1998 to 2004. And when Helios began to use this plane for their airways, there was one major issue that was seen repeatedly happening with it, and it was the pressurization problems. One of the more recent issues before the incident that we're going to talk about today was something that occurred December 16th, 2004, just a little under a year before the events of what we're going to talk about. The plane had a flight to Warsaw and experienced a rapid loss of cabin pressure. Now, the crew on the plane at the time reported hearing loud banging from an aft service door, and when they checked it out, there was a hole about the size of a human hand around the seal of the door. So, an investigation was underway, and while there wasn't any conclusive determination, there were two possibilities that arose on what caused this. Now, the first possibility that they cited was an electrical malfunction that caused an opening in the outflow valve, and a second theory that was proposed was somebody had inadvertently opened this aft service door, and with those two theories in mind, it just seemed to be dismissed and thrown under the rug. But it wasn't the first issue. As far back as 2003, crew were complaining of discomfort within their ears before an altitude warning went off within the cabin. And these were just two issues that I found involving pressurization with this plane alone. And I'm sure there are more cases that could have been reported on, but these are the two most recent that I found in correlation to what we're going to talk about today. This will bring us up to the 13th of August, 2005, around 9 o'clock in the evening, local time. The plane has now been rented out to Helios. It's been flying with them for probably about a year at this point. It was destined to go from Heathrow Airport in London to Larnaca, and as they were making their way to their destination, there was a pressure issue that arose in the flight with, once again, another loud banging, and people were reporting that the seal around one of the plane doors where the banging was coming from had become frozen. So the cabin crew made a note so that the plane could be checked out once they had landed. They landed roughly around 1:25 in the morning local time on the 14th of August. And once they landed, inspection went underway. Now, the man who was over this inspection was a man by the name of Alan Irwin. He was in charge, and he had been doing this kind of work for quite some time, and had a pretty prestigious reputation. He had been working for Helios for roughly about 6 months on a contract, and he had originally come from the UK. Now, as Alan was doing the review of the plane, they had to perform a pressurization leak check. This would mean that they would have to go into the plane, pressurize it to see if it was maintaining pressure adequately. Now, they would have to manually pressurize the cabin, even though it was grounded. In order to do this, there is a switch in the cockpit known as a pressurization mode selector, and it would have to be flipped from automatic to manual. And so that's just what he did. And part of this test was to make sure that the plane was getting a proper amount of oxygen while gaining altitude. Normally when flying, this process is done automatically when the pilots are flying, but it can be done manually as well. So while checking, Allen didn't manage to recreate the issue that the plane had while it was up in the air. So he completed the rest of the inspection and came to the conclusion after all of his other checks that there were no known defects, no known leaks, and no abnormal noises within the plane. They had assumed that the pressurization system was working just fine, and after this, they left. But they did not turn the switch back to the automatic position. It was left in the manual position. Something that would seem like such a simple lookover, but this simple mistake would cost the lives of 121 people. So we are in the early morning hours of August 14th, 2005. The crew went about their routine. However, there was one flight attendant that had fallen ill and wasn't going to be able to make it on the passage. However, two flight attendants named Luisa Butteri, who was 32 years old, and Andrea Prodromou, who was 25 years old, were able to fill in for this sick attendant. Now, Andrea, who was the fill-in for the sick attendant, initially was reluctant to go, but he eventually agreed to go when he realized that his girlfriend, also a flight attendant, would be on this flight as well, and her name was Harris Charlembu. Now, the captain of this plane was Hans-Jürgen Merten, who was 59 at the time, and co-pilot was First Officer Pamba Charlembu, who was 51 and no relation to Harris. Both pilots were experienced. They had been doing this for a while, and combined, they had 23,000 hours plus of flight log. So, we had the pilot and the co-pilot, and we had four other flight attendants. So we had six crew members in total. And these six members would be the sole providers and protectors of passengers, ranging from as young as 4 and 5 years old up into their, 50s and 60s. A third of the flight was children less than the age of 12. Now, before they took off, the pilots have to perform a routine pre-flight check to ensure that all the switches are in their correct position, as well as to make sure that the plane is still suited for flying, that there's nothing wrong that could have been overlooked. Something to note about Captain Hans is that prior to being employed with Helios, he had been fired from his previous flight employer. And the reason for his departure from that or his termination was a failure to comply with these pre-flight procedures. Despite this, he was still able to be hired by Helios, and a lot of it seems to boil down to the point that his references weren't checked, and I don't know how it was with Helios just being a low-cost air system, but it seems like they didn't really care or they just weren't aware, but it's still a failure on their part to check. There was also a record for the first officer having issues as well with rushing through safety checklists. And after the fact, it came to be known that the pilots necessarily did not care for one another. They were not the best of friends. They had frequent disagreements, and it was so bad that the co-pilot had complained a lot about the pilot's behavior and attitude. And it was so bad that the co-pilot was actually looking to quit Helios and change his employment because of it. But regardless, they were still paired together and they were flying. So by this time, the Helios Flight 522 was falling a little bit behind their schedule. They were scheduled to leave around 9 o'clock. It was, 5 to 7 minutes after, and they were making the pre-flight checklist, and it was even more rushed through because of the slight delay in their schedule. Somehow, through all of these checklists, and I know, with the checklist that pilots have to do, it's not just one little list, it's multiple lists that are super long. But still, these are supposed to be experienced pilots, and neither of them seemed to notice that the pressurization switch was set to manual instead of automatic. But regardless, They went on, gave the clear that they were ready to go, and at 9:07, they depart the airport for their destination. Within a few minutes, ground control clears the flight to gain altitude, where they would be reaching a maximum of 34,000 feet. Now, since the cabin pressurization was still set onto manual and not auto, this meant that the cabin was going to have a hard time as it climbed higher and higher into the air, gaining proper pressure and maintaining proper amount of oxygen because, you know, the higher you get in elevation, the thinner the air becomes, and it can drastically screw with you. Now, the pilots would have gotten a warning about the cabin altitude being abnormally high, around the 4,000 to 6,000 foot mark from what I had studied. But somehow, even with these warnings, whether it be a light or whatever, nothing was done at this time. Now, soon the plane had reached 12,000 feet, and a blaring alarm started to sound in the cockpit of the plane. This warning sound was the cabin altitude warning horn. But what was so bad about this horn and the sound of it was that it, even though indicated pressure loss, it was nearly identical to another sound, the sound of takeoff configuration warning. Now, the pilots would have been more experienced with the takeoff configuration warning versus the cabin altitude warning, especially if they're doing their checks properly. So they heard this sound and immediately took it for the takeoff configuration warning glitching out while they're flying. As such, they continued to rise the plane to the elevation that they needed to rise. Now, when they reached about 18,000 feet, then the oxygen masks would deploy in the passenger cabin and fall down and start causing a little bit of concern for the people that were in the plane. And, of course, the pilots, they would be getting a warning to put on their masks as well. But it was noted that neither pilot put on their oxygen mask, they completely missed the warnings to the altitude. Hans, in a few moments, would make a call to the dispatcher saying that the takeoff configuration warning was on, and the dispatcher below naturally would have been confused by this because the takeoff configuration warning would only sound if they were still on the ground and not in the air. This is when Alan Irwin was called in by dispatch to see what was wrong. So as Alan is called in, Hans completely starts to talk about a lot of crazy things and he wasn't making sense. He called down that the ventilation cooling fan lights were off and then contradicted himself a few seconds later saying that they actually weren't switched off. And this crucial moment right here is where Alan thought that maybe Hans was confusing the cooling light switch with the pressurization mode selector switch. And this is where you could hear Alan on the recordings that are on YouTube if the pressurization was set to auto, but there was no reply from the captain. The answer didn't come, we now know, because at this time the captain and co-pilot was experiencing what is known as hypoxia. Simply to put, a lack of oxygen in your blood. There's not enough oxygen, and it can cause a variety of issues such as confusion, dizziness, bad vision, and mood changes that can either be a euphoric sensation, or you can become really aggressive. Now, since the pilots didn't have their masks on, they weren't able to get oxygen, and they were now suffering from extreme dissociation from themselves. Now, dissociation, for anybody who has experienced it, it's already horrifying as you're losing a sense of yourself, and it feels like there's nothing you can do to get it back, and a lot of times you don't even realize what's going on. And for these pilots who are flying a plane, this can be a matter of life and death. So now we're at 16,000 plus feet, and the master caution light starts flashing in the cockpit. Per person, the masks could give about 12 minutes of oxygen, and with this light blaring, you know, all these oxygen masks are down, and it's a matter of trying to get people to put these on so they can breathe. And it's only designed to have that many minutes, just enough to give people the crucial time to descend down so they can get into more breathable altitudes. But as we know now, the pilots were already confused and suffering from hypoxia, so they didn't know to go down. They just kept going up, and on top of that, the plane It's debated whether or not they still had it on autopilot, but we know eventually that it would have been on autopilot with the way that it was flying after the pilots do pass out. So, with all their confusion, before this initial pass out that's going to happen with them, the pilots were now focusing on the cooling light because they were getting a signal that the equipment that they had was not cooling properly due to pressure issues, but they were still somehow not aware of pressure issues. They were just trying to figure out why the hell things were not cooling properly with what little cognitive dissonance that they had. And all this time, Alan Irwin is still on the phone with the pilots. He's trying to direct the pilot to the pressurization switch, but it was said that Hans became kind of irate and demanding and was not making much sense because he was wanting to know where the circuit cooling breakers were to try to figure out the situation with cooling his equipment. Now, since he ignored Alan altogether, Alan just told him where the switch was. The switch was like behind his chair in the cockpit, and he thought with that he had helped the pilots, the issue was going to be resolved, and he could go. But they had no idea of the horror that was going on up in the air. Now, all this time, the plane is continuing to climb up to the altitude that it's destined to go to. The plane, clearly at this point, was on autopilot, and pretty soon it was going to become a ghost plane. Now, the last time that we had heard from the pilot, Hans, he had been asking about where a switch was. And from that moment on, ground control tried to make contact with the plane or try to locate where it was, and multiple air controls tried to reach out. It wasn't just, you know, the airport where they had taken off from. It was where they were going to, everything like that, trying to reach out, but it was multiple failed attempts. And it was noted that over 30 calls over multiple frequencies were made, but was met with radio silence. So by this point, the plane has entered into Greece, and it's entering the territory where it needs to start descending. People, however, would only be able to watch in bewilderment at the airport or wherever nearby to see that the plane was not descending, but it was pretty much turning back to where it came from. The plane was stuck going in a complete circle until, you know, its fuel systems ran out. It was stuck flying, and it was confusing so many people as to what was going on. So, at this time, two F-16 fighter jets were sent out to try to establish contact with the Helios 522 flight. It was when these fighter jets were able to make contact that they noticed something that was purely out of a horror film. The jets, when they were close enough to the windows to where they could see, they noted that the first officer, the co-pilot, was face down on the control board and that the pilot was nowhere to be found. The plane seemed like it was flying itself. There was nobody guiding it. What we will find out later is that in the process of trying to find the switch that he was so desperate to find, he had passed out, just getting up, falling over, and that's why they could not see him. The pilots also depicted that all the passengers in the passenger cabin were sat motionless as if they were dead or sleeping. Some of them had on their oxygen masks, while many others didn't. It was a truly horrifying moment. So for about 20 or so minutes, the planes were neck and neck with the Helios craft. And about 20 minutes after this, the pilots noticed somebody slowly trying to make their way up into the cockpit. This person was Andreas, the flight attendant who was not supposed to be on this flight. So as he made his way up into the cockpit, he sat down in the pilot's chair, put on the headphones, placed his hands on the controls, and was trying, you know, to control the plane and get it to safety. He couldn't speak to the F-16 pilots as their radio wave frequency was different. It was on a completely different channel. And it was, I can only imagine the horror that this man must have felt. Because right around the time that he was trying to take control of this plane, the left engine gives out and explodes from fuel deprivation. The plane now was descending, and the pilots of the F-16s could only watch as the plane would eventually crash. They communicated to the rescue team down below of everything that they were seeing. Now, Andreas, as hard as he tried and as much of a hero as he is in this story, he did have flight experience, but he had none with a Boeing. He was doing everything he could to keep this plane from crashing into the airport, nearby civilization, anything that could have caused like a massive loss of life. I feel like that is the only thing that was going on in his mind, because he knew that they were not going to make it out of there alive. The plane at this point was losing altitude so rapidly, about 1,500 feet per minute. And Andreas weakly calls out, "Mayday. This is Helios Flight 522. It was on the wrong frequency, so nobody heard him, and he was just screaming with all he had left of him into the void. Nobody would ever hear his last words. And around this time, the right engine finally gave out and exploded from lack of fuel. Shortly after noon, Andreas looked to one of the pilots and, with whatever strength that he had left, pointed down to the ground, signaling to them that the plane was going down and that they would crash. He knew that they were all going to die, and the pilot could only watch in horror and communicate with the rescue team as the plane would crash into a fireball. All he could do was give the coordinates and a Mayday report. Helios 522 crashed into a mountain near Grammatiko in Greece, killed all 121 on board, burning them beyond recognition. Of the passengers, there were 93 adults and 22 children. These were people who were couples, friends, family members even, just trying to go on a vacation or trying to go see family. It would later show that the plane had impacted at over 400 miles per hour. And the saddest part about it was it was determined that these passengers were alive when they crashed, but we can only hope that they were completely unconscious to the point that they did not know what was happening to them. Now, after the crash, an investigation report was written in the wake, and it cited multiple failures to recognize the pressurization issues, and they also blamed the airway itself for breaking rules and cutting corners. Questions rose as to why the crew didn't enter the cabin despite knowing the access code to the cabin and having, you know, excess oxygen tanks that could have given them multiple hours. And it was also questioned why it took Andreas so long to finally reach the cockpit. So like I said, there were 4 oxygen cylinders that were in the plane that they knew of. They discovered that 3 of 4 of them were used. But the theory that arose was that the crew was using these oxygen tanks to, you know, give the passengers the air that they needed, much to their own detriment, hoping that the pilots were going to descend. But we will never know what actually happened. Now, the airway itself only stayed in business for roughly about a year before, you know, all the situation that happened with Helios Flight 22 caused them to go out of business in 2006 due to the massive loss and response. In 2007, families of the victims came forward with lawsuits against Boeing. The main citation of the lawsuit was that the similar sounding alarms for 2 dysfunctions, one being super minor while the other being catastrophic, was negligent. Now, the case ended up being settled out of court. We flash forward to 2008. 4 Helios officials, including Alan Irwin, was charged with manslaughter. All of them were found guilty in April of 2012. Now, 2013, Alan Irwin had successfully appealed from his conviction, and he maintains that he and his crew did everything right and actually did set the switch back to auto. But from what we could tell, it was never put back onto auto. The remaining people had about 10 years apiece that they were sentenced. but they paid their way out of jail, essentially for a mere 79,000 euros, and it caused absolute outrage at the injustice that was done. Now, the site where the plane crashed, there is a memorial that stands to commemorate all 121 lives. Now, this case caused all of the Boeing 737 models by 2011 to have two additional warning lights in the cockpit, one for the takeoff configuration, one for cabin altitude. Now, as far as pop culture goes, this accident did inspire quite a bit of TV shows, movies, and novels. One I can think of right off the bat was there was an episode of Ghost Whisperer that featured a plane crash that was oddly similar to what happened here with Helios. There was also a supernatural horror film called Flight 7500 in 2014 that was loosely based off of it. And I saw that in 2020 there was a novel called The Lost Love Song that had a loosely inspired plane crash based on this as well. The Discovery Channel and National Geographic also featured the actual story of Helios on their series Mayday in a season 4 episode titled Ghost Plane. And that is the story of the ghost plane / ghost flight Helios 522. Thank you guys so much for listening in to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If there is anything that you would like to add on or anything that I have gotten wrong, please feel free to let me know. Comment on YouTube. You can reach out to me via email at manicmanorpodcast@gmail.com. You can also reach out on Facebook and Instagram as well at Manic Manor Podcast. So I hope you guys have a wonderful week, and until the next time, see ya.